You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Shop the biggest selection of apparel and merchandise at the Cleveland Browns Team Shop. You visit the Team Shop in downtown Cleveland at First Energy Stadium. It's open 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Wednesday through Sunday, or you shop online on the Browns mobile app or at shop.clevelandbrowns.com. Vic Carucci with Jim Donovan, who is sitting in for Nathan Zagura today. Jim, interesting because we were talking in the break here about the Olympics and NBC, KYC, obviously, your day job or night job. I don't know what that job. This is your day job. No. But anyway, your night job there with the coverage. And I was asking you about Bob Costas, right. and you didn't see your because the poor guy's dealt with pink eye. Right. You know, of all places, he has to be in Russia and deal with an ailment like that. And then having a cast of thousands fill in for him. But
right.
But as I understand it, you have filled in for Bob Costas.
Yeah. Now, the last time before this Sochi pink eye episode where Matt Lauer and Meredith Vieira ended up filling in for Bob on a primetime or a major sporting event, the last time he missed an event was when Bud Carson took the Browns to the AFC Championship game against John Elway and the Denver Broncos out at Mile High Stadium.
Yeah, I was there for
and
that.
And I was at – you were at the game?
Yeah,
okay,
for the
so
Buffalo
I was
News.
At the game, and I had done games for NBC that year, okay. But now they're at that level where it's their – you know, their
the
super
playoffs
agents,
and they got their
– Dick Enberg, and I think it was Bill Walsh was doing the game with
okay.
him. So anyway, I'm sitting up in the press box, and the Browns are, you know, wilting away in the game.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, this guy comes up with a radio, and it's and he squats down beside me, and he goes, "Are you Jim Donovan?" And I said – Yeah. And I had like on a real snazzy plaid blazer. I thought that was very nice. And Hugo Boss. And the guy, I go, "Yeah, I am Jim Donovan." And the guy goes into the radio, KQI 361. Yeah. We got him. You got him. Is my pass invalid? They go, "No, we need you to do the postgame show. Bob Costas is sick with the flu." So they bring me down, and I don't have a navy blue blazer, which is the uniform of NBC at the time. So do you remember Rudy Martsky,
who wrote the USA Today?
Yeah, USA Today. Yeah. They took his blazer from him and put it on me.
Oh, my God.
And I went and I did the postgame show.
You're roughly the same size as Rudy. I could say. Just saying.
Anyway, so I ended up filling in for Bob Costas.
So you filled in for Costas, and Martsky filled in.
Whatever, he was without it. Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, and he had a horrible case of the flu to the point where when he wasn't showing up for the driver who went to the hotel to pick him up when they knocked on his door finally because the big game and he was unconscious in bed. He had the flu, so I filled in for him.
He gets the worst timing for these calamities. All right, it's
that's
time.
That's how Lou Gehrig started.
That's how it started. That's how it started. That's right. You can't get, what is it, Wally Pipp.
That's right, Wally Pipp,
Wally, he became an adjective. Jason, our producer, Jason Gibbs, is going to take us through now. Do we want to do a little after further review, Jay?
We do.
All right, let's do it.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon,
Jason. Good afternoon, Jason.
Question number one, in your opinion, who has more pressure to succeed, Ray Farmer or Mike Pettine?
Jim Donovan when he's sitting in for Bob
Costas. Yeah, well, no. I didn't have enough time to think about it.
I'm going to say more pressure is clearly on Ray Farmer because the vision of the organization, what we were talking about earlier, sits with him, rests with him. And this is all about getting not only the right talent, but talent that fits what this head coach is doing, what this coaching staff wants to do. And a lot has fallen on him in this fallout. People are really happy to see the Banner Lombardi team gone, but it will only last, that euphoria, if that's the right way to put it, only lasts as long as Ray Farmer is able to do something good.
I concur on that, Jason, because I think not only for all of what Vic said and how big the draft is, but how short the walk-up time for him is to get this. I mean, this is like finding out the final exam is next Tuesday and it's already Friday and you have the weekend to get ready for it. In NFL terms, he is being compressed to get a lot of guys in here with a lot of big draft picks.
Because as much as he's been a part of the process, even as assistant GM, running it is a different story. And he said he would maybe tweak the grading system that Mike Lombardi and Joe Banner put in place, et cetera. He's going to do things differently. Mm-hmm. So how much differently can he do those things and still make it work in short order?
Mm. All right, guys, speaking of Ray Farmer, outside of the quarterback position, what's the top position of need that Ray Farmer and his staff should be focused on at the Combine this week?
Outside of what? I'm sorry.
Quarterback.
Outside of quarterback. All right. I think I'm going to say I think the Browns definitely need a wide receiver to go along on the other side of Gordon. I really do. I think it will make everything flow. It's going to make everybody's life a lot better if you have something else on the other side of Gordon. And something else now that people are going to have to pay attention to. Not a project. Somebody that can come in there and play.
I'm going to go along with that, too. The nature of this draft should be that you get another player that you could almost certainly believe is going to be a complement to Josh Gordon. Now, will he be? We'll see. But it's got to happen. Something's got to happen in this draft or free agency to fix that. One of the things on this top 53 list that we'd put together that stuck out to a lot of folks is having Greg Little at 53, having Devon Best at 52. But the point was those two players desperately needed to be complements
yes.
to Gordon. They desperately needed to be big contributors for a team built around an offense that was going to throw first to set up the run, and they failed so miserably there. It was so woefully bad. That's why they ended up down there. I mean, their contribution was virtually nil, and there was nothing good you could say about what either of those guys did for this team, or this team isn't 4-12 if they stepped up even halfway between where they ended, what they did, and what you'd want as the best.
Well, it goes against the argument, real quickly, in the Little case. It goes against the argument of the Little League coach that has to put the kid in because every kid has to play, and you put the kid out in right field, and the ball finds the kid out in right field, and it goes over his head, and you lose the ball game. Little was out on the field for every play, it seemed, and the ball never found him. I mean, it was unbelievable. Now, he either didn't get open, doesn't know how to get open, or just the quarterback had no confidence that even if he was open, he could hold on to the football if he threw it to him.
All right, guys, question number three. Obviously, the Ted Wells report last week getting a lot of traction at the end of the week, and then on this show yesterday as well. Do Richie Incognito or Jonathan Martin ever play another down in an NFL uniform?
I think yes. For let's start with Jonathan Martin. It's going to have to be, quote, a right situation. One in which you have a head coach whose control of the locker room, but of the whole, just the whole football operation is such that there will be no concerns, no worries about a guy who, and I don't know, I'm not even going to go to the place of saying he was overly sensitive, but whatever level of sensitivity triggered this response, where others would say, "Well, you kind of deal with the stuff that goes on in the guy stuff atmosphere of a football locker room." And I'm hearing more former players kind of weigh in on that, and that there was also a lot of support initially, and maybe still, for Richie Incognito between the two of them. But I think Martin has some skill level that someone's going to still want to try to take advantage of there. And in terms of Incognito, he's so all over the lot. You can't keep track of what this guy does as far as like all the Twitter stuff. A lot of baggage there. He's got the less of the two chances to play again, but I wouldn't be shocked if he winds up somewhere.
I don't think he will play.
You think he's done with
football? Yeah, I really do. I think
or football's done with him.
I think football's done with him is the accurate way. The other guy, I think somebody, you're right. Right situation. He was a high draft choice, right, coming out of Stanford. I think that he'll get another shot. And that will be very interesting to see how he is welcomed into his next locker room.
I mean, the thing with Incognito is this, though. Just as we say right situation for Martin, I think right situation for Incognito, but not right to the extent of not policing, letting him get off, do the things that he does, or get out of control. You maybe have a structure, and can he fit a structure? Is there any way possible for this guy to fit a structure?
And the more he talks, Vic, and the more he writes and tweets, I would say there isn't. I think he has painted himself into a Parks and Recreation job somewhere.
I like it. A little NBC reference as well. taking care of the home network there. One final.
Hey, kids.
Let me show you what we're going to do today. Yeah. Let's work on tweeting.
Speaking of NBC, what is your favorite Winter Olympic sport? With the Olympics being
out. All right, now I think we should eliminate hockey.
Yeah, yeah.
Fair enough.
Because, I mean, that's great.
Yeah. Of course, and that's going to be
incidentally, that might be gone now in 4 years. Today, the NHL was very, very cool to breaking the league or halting the league again in 4 years in South Korea and sending the players over there. Anyway, what is your favorite
sport? All right, my favorite, this is Olympic sport, right, Jay? You're asking?
Correct.
Okay, I'll tell you, I've got multiple favorites, but the one that I've really come to love is the skeleton. I think that it combines the best of everything. That what it takes in terms of guts, courage, to get on this little, whatever this is, that little piece of, it's. I'm looking at my desk in front of me here, and it's smaller It's like a piece of cardboard.
Plywood. Yeah,
and you're laminated cardboard, 2 inches above the surface of ice, and with face first, where you got your helmet is your bumper. And,
Vic,
and
I think you should start. I don't think you should go right down the ice track, all right? I don't think you should go and say, all right, I'm willing to. I think you should start at the Little League World Series where they come down that hill at Lamedy Stadium.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think that's how you should begin. And then gradually.
It just looks so amazingly cool.
It does, yeah.
And you're just going, you know, what is it, 80-something miles an hour?
I think one guy said 90 the other day.
87 to 90 miles an hour.
My favorite sport, I got to tell you, those downhill skiers are and the speeds they're hitting now unbelievable. And I still think that one of the most memorable Olympic moments for me was when Franz Klammer won the men's downhill and went on the edge the whole way down. Frank Gifford on the call was one of the great memorable moments. If you can YouTube it and watch it, it's just unbelievable when he won that. There was a lot of pressure on him because the Olympics were in his home country.
The downhill I love, and the other one that's probably a tie for second for me is the ski jump. I mean, the jumping, the soaring, and how those guys. I watched that. I think
that was on
night.
Last night. Yeah,
and just how it. But you know what? The replay looked more imposing and impressive than the slow-mo where they got that camera angle than when you saw it live, when you saw it the first way through. I mean, that was impressive, too, but they seemed to really soar fly and hang in the air forever.
Hey, Jason and Vic, do you remember when they had the guy Eddie the Eagle?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, now, I spent a weekend with him. NBC Sports had me go and spend a weekend with him. They took him to Lake Placid to work the ski jump there, and the guy was hysterically funny. It was after the 80 games, so it was like in 84, 85.
Okay, okay.
And they sent me there. They did this fantasy sports thing with Len Berman at the time.
Yeah.
And they sent me there, and I was with Eddie the Eagle. And let me tell you something, honestly, the last place he should have been was on a ski jump. I mean, he really should have been working at a Steak and Shake.
At that point.
At that point, yeah. No question. Yeah.
Steak and Shake. I like that. Steak and Shake and Parks and Recreation. Do you think Incognito could work at a Steak and Shake?
SUNY, I don't know if he'd get by the screening process.
Jason, anything else?
That is it for today, gentlemen.
All right, Jason.
We've got much more coming up on CBD. Vic and Jim, ESPN 850 WKNR.